Well, here we are at episode 13 of our history tour of Broken Hill. The archives officer of the Broken Hill City Library, Brian Tonkin, and I have come down to a very well-known site. Brian, did you want to explain to the listeners where we've come today?
Yeah, we're looking at the Trades Hall. This is the bastion of the trade union movement in Broken Hill, and also affectionately known as the Kremlin. For many years, when the unions at the strength of course, we saw it develop from the early days of early 1900s. It's interesting, if we look at the actual development of the building itself, somebody's done some really good research, because I know in my folder at the library that talks about back in 1887 that the New South Wales government actually dedicated this piece of land as a potential trades hall to be erected on this corner, which I found quite significant, given the fact that it was another 10 years or so before we even started to think about going that way of building some sort of structure as magnificent as this. So the first attempt to build the trades hall occurred in April 1890. Sir Henry Parkes, who you remember talking about when he laid the foundation stone for the town hall, and a few others he went around. He laid the foundation stone. Unfortunately, by the time the 1892 miners' strike occurred, all the funds disappeared. No fundless, no cash in the bank, so to speak. And in the meantime, of course, the original foundation stone disappeared. Got lost in transit, so it looks like somebody souvenired it, or just basically, yes, it would have been. Gee, wouldn't it be wonderful to find that again? Oh, wonderful. Well, if you look at the second foundation stone, I guess, laid by Ben Tillett, a British trade union official from the Maritime Trade Unions movement in London. And we saw this start develop in stages, and the first section was actually open in January of 1899. And have a look at the magnificence of this particular building. With some of the filigree work, you can see over the arches of the actual building itself, archways when you enter the building. So we've got the main entranceway here. You can see that certainly seems to be with the nice little hood, the nice light still sitting there. Yes, so when you just look, even though it's standing, what now, over 100 plus years, it's still in magnificent condition, is it not? Even the stained glass windows. Yeah, stained glass window depicts the Rose of England, the Shamrock of Ireland, the Thistle of Scotland, and the Daffodil of Wales. So obviously representing the British heritage, and I guess that's once again was looking at what Broken Hill was principally stocked with, that British stock, but also that there was a lot of obviously other races that came along in those 1890s.
The building stands as a testament to the Union and its influence on Broken Hill, but I mean, just the building itself, when driving down Blend Street, you can see it from a mile away, and you can see how ornate and impressive it is. It really shows how important the Unions are to this town, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and that's... I always used to think, I was a bit ostentatious and so on, but also at the same token, it was probably in keeping with the times, wasn't it? I mean, what did you build? Did you build a wooden iron building and just say, well, it's going to last 5 minutes? Because that had to be grand and that to make a statement. And I guess, in a sense, it did make a statement, because while the Mining Managers Association formed a union of their own in the sense of getting some of the mining managers to join, and they almost become the opposition, did they not, to the union movement, so they formed their own union in effect. But where's their building today? Where's their sort of green? It's not there, is it? It just doesn't exist, full stop. And that's why this is such a magnificent building and a grand sort of statement still in 2011.
Is it a little bit incongruous to have a body that is supposed to represent the working man, the low-income people, and then have such a fine structure showing the body's power? Or is it in itself indicative of the power of the working man?
Well, it is, and I think that the fact that the money that they raised, not only was it the Trades Hall Trust, and we're talking about the unions themselves and the ladies' committees, that they raised huge amounts of money. Was it about £9,000 was spent in total? How do you represent the trade union movement as far as their headquarters concerned?
Now we've just stepped into the lobby, which is quite a grand foyer, and there's some pretty amazing stuff around us, isn't there, Brian?
Yes, there's the old ticket office. I think probably a lot of the listeners in the past have come through and seen this and used this particular ticket office.
So it's really, I mean, it's an impressive building from the outside, and that definitely carries on through to the interior, doesn't it?
Well, we're talking about the flowers, you can actually see the rose and the daffodil, yeah. It really does bounce off, don't know what's that sunlight is coming through, and of course upstairs you can see the LED lighting as well. Just inside the foyer, we're looking at the press ceiling, and of course you have this sweeping staircase that goes up to the first floor offices. And you've got the BIC offices here in the foyer itself, off the foyer. You have a good display of the old badge shows. used to wear, had a badge to show that you're a financial member, and you'd have four of those a year.
Was there a strong feeling of community and brotherhood within the union, and did that sometimes come out as negativity towards non-union members?
Absolutely, and when you think about when the actual union movement started here in the 1880s, first meeting on the barrier was taken on something like the 9th of January 1886. And even though the main AMA, the Amalgamated Miners Association, influence was coming from Silverton, but of course very quickly they realised that things were happening on the barrier, that Silverton was going to lose its influence and the Broken Hill was obviously going to take over. And so by July of 1886 they'd moved from Silverton into Broken Hill. And so this was where it was going to be. Certainly, every time the union would put, a log of claims in, there would always be a counter log of claims by the Mining Managers Association. But mainly it was the biggest force behind that, of course, in those early days was the BHP. And it was the general manager, usually, of the BHP that really forced the issues all the time.
And there's a piece of LED lighting here just above the doorway which shows two hands shaking and says unity and friendship.
So when we're looking at that particular stained glass, yes, there's the handshake. You know, when you think about what a handshake means today, is it the same solidarity that, you know, I've agreed a person or you do a deal or you're saying thanks very much, I'll take that. Shake the hand. And I think that's what it was talking about. Well, not unity and friendship and the linking of the hands. And gee, it's interesting to see even the, we've already got a just ordinary shirt on one side. What would that represent on the other side?
The business suit.
Business, doesn't it? Yeah, it looks like it's sort of implying to me anyhow that it's sort of, yeah, it's just not worker, but it's certainly mine managers possibly in the worker. Yeah. Could well be.
Now we're standing right at the entrance to an incredibly large and impressive hall. It's probably going to be kind of hard to portray this in words for the listeners, but you can probably hear the echo all around us right now. Could you tell the listeners about this hall, Brian?
Yes, this is quite incredible, isn't it? When you think that 1904, the large hall comes into being. So you've got to remember this trades hall, it wasn't just built one and just, this is the design. Tom Jackson was the architect. And we're going to just put together a hall and the infrastructure to have the complete trades hall. This took a number of years, and this is one that was erected in 1904. This, incidentally, was discovered when they were doing some repair work, restoration work, and they were scraping off a bit of paint. Wow, look at this. And so what became a very simple job became very much a mammoth job.
So the original painting had been covered?
Absolutely, and until they were doing this restoration work, 1980s, 90s, that the restoration work started to go ahead. I think stage one was completed by 1987, and as I said, when they started just to scratch away on this, wow, look what was underneath. So how magnificent. When we talk about now being fully restored and painted and, you know, having a look at this, when the person walks in today, this was fully owned by the workers themselves, something that's probably unique in Australia itself. And look at the magnificence.
It's sort of unfortunate that some of the times when we get to see how important the union and this movement is to the town is when important people in the union pass away. And it was Bill O'Neill's passing just a few weeks ago. It gave us a window into how important this movement and these people are to the community, didn't it?
Absolutely. So when you think about, if you just step back again and look at some of the strikes, for example, 1889, 1892, 1909, 1916, 1919, 1921. So when you thread all those, what were people working for? They were just looking for better conditions. They were trying to make the workplace safer. They were trying to make the town a better place to live. So when you think of all those class wars, for a better name, once all those had actually settled down, we saw the creation of the Barrier Industrial Council, which had oversight of all those bodies. And so all the unions then came under a central council, I guess, in 1923. And so you saw peace. I guess you had peace. Then, of course, the Mining Managers Association, that, as we said, came to being in 1886, also started to think, OK, let's try and negotiate, let's try and work together, we'll make this town a better place. And I think that was the big turning point. When we're talking about Bill O'Neill, I'm just leading up to Geordie O'Neill, which is Bill's dad, who became one of the Barrier Industrial Council presidents. Bill himself then follows his father, I guess, in a sense of coming along. He's involved in the FED and FA, Federated Engine Drivers and Firemen's Association. Then he's also Barrier Industrial Council president, and he also becomes an alderman for a term on the council. So far as energy is concerned in the family, it's a pretty impressive record. I don't think anybody has done as much for the union movement or worked so well for the union movement of a father and son combination. And maybe that record would probably never be broken. It takes a lot of dedication, a lot of sacrifice. Even though people used to grumble and say, oh, you know, say all the negative things about trade unions, but of course, the reality is you still need a trade union today in 2011 as much importance as it was back in 1911. So we aren't never going to get rid of that situation. We're going to live in a perfect world where all these wonderful things are going to happen to us. Once that Barrier Industrial Council set up came into being, then I think that peace, industrial peace, certainly was prevalent, even though there was plenty of strikes. You know, once wages agreements came up, the roundtable conference worked well. That sort of give and take at the negotiating table. And as we saw, town definitely prospered. And we go back to that 1950s period. There was, how many people had said they came through Broken Hill and they had no intentions of working here, you know? Oh, there's a job here. Lead bonus was high. Okay. Stopped for a while. And 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years down the track, yeah, they're still there. Yeah. And so that's how a lot of things happen, don't they? And people just, I'm just passing through. And they make their home, and that's where they spend the rest of their life. So in a sense, I guess you do belong to, if we can use that terminology, brotherhood. And it's certainly true that no matter where you are in the world, the union movement is still trying to make strides in better conditions, better wages, and hopefully have some sort of influence on policies, on national policies, and hope that the political will never actually die.
Well, Brian, I feel like we could talk about the union every week for probably the rest of the year. It's so crucial to the people of Broken Hill and the town itself. Thank you so much for your time and your tour here.
Well, thank you very much, Noah. And I think next week maybe we could expand a bit more and talk about the personality, some of the stories, and talk about the actual power of the Barrier Industrial Councils.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Continue on.